So, Genesis 26, the last time, a month ago, we left off at verse 12. So that's where we will we'll pick it up when we start to go through it. Goal would be to get through verse 33, but before we do that, let's go ahead and read the, I'll read the passage and progress from there. All right. Now there was a famine in the land besides the former famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went to Gerar to Abimelech, king of the Philistines. And the Lord appeared to him and said, "Do not go down to Egypt. Dwell on the land of which I shall tell you. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with you and will bless you. For to you and to your offspring I will give all these lands. And I will establish the oath that I swore to Abraham your father. I will multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven, and will give to your offspring all these lands, and in your offspring all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." So Isaac settled in Gerar. When the men of the place asked him about his wife, he said, "She is my sister," for he feared to say, "My wife," thinking, "lest the men of the place should kill me because of Rebekah," because she was attractive in appearance. When he had been there a long time, Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked out of a window and saw Isaac laughing with Rebekah, his wife. So Abimelech called Isaac and said, "Behold, she is your wife. How then could you say she is my sister?" Isaac said to him, "Because I thought lest I die because of her." Abimelech said, "What is this you have done to us? What one of the people might easily have lain with your wife, and you would have brought guilt upon us." So Abimelech warned all the people, saying, "Whoever touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death." And Isaac sowed in that land and reaped in the same year 100-fold. The Lord blessed him, and the man became rich and gained more and more until he became very wealthy. He had possessions of flocks and herds and many servants, so that the Philistines envied him. Now the Philistines had stopped and filled with earth all the wells that his father's servants had dug in the days of Abraham his father. And Abimelech said to Isaac, "Go away from us, for you are much mightier than we." So Isaac departed from there and encamped in the valley of Gerar and settled there. And Isaac dug again the wells of water that had been dug in the days of Abraham his father, which the Philistines had stopped after the death of Abraham. And he gave them the names that his father had given them. But when Isaac's servants dug in the valley and found there a well of spring water, the herdsmen of Gerar quarreled with Isaac's herdsmen, saying, "The water is ours." So he called the name of the well Esek, because they contended with him. Then they dug another well, and they quarreled over that also, so he called its name Sitnah. And he moved from there and dug another well, and they did not quarrel over it. So he called its name Rehoboth, saying, "For now the Lord has made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land." From there he went up to Beersheba, and the Lord appeared to him the same night and said, "I am the God of Abraham your father. Fear not, for I am with you and will bless you and multiply your offspring for my servant's sake." So he built an altar there and called upon the name of the Lord and pitched his tent there. And there Isaac's servants dug a well. When Abimelech went to him from Gerar with Ahuzath, his advisor, and Phicol, the commander of his army, Isaac said to them, "Why have you come to me, seeing that you hate me and have sent me away from you?" They said, "We see plainly that the Lord has been with you." So we said, "Let there be a sworn pact between us, between you and us, and let us make a covenant with you, that you will do us no harm, just as we have not touched you and have done to you nothing but good and have sent you away in peace. You are now the blessed of the Lord." So he made them a feast, and they ate and drank. In the morning they rose early and exchanged oaths, And Isaac sent them on their way, and they departed from him in peace. That same day, Isaac's servants came and told him about the well that they had dug, and said to him, "We have found water." He called it Sheba. Therefore, the name of the city is Beersheba to this day. And we'll stop there, verse 33. So this passage really demonstrates the how God is overseeing his promise to bless Isaac because of Abraham, and God's providence is all throughout. Now God appears to Isaac twice, and confirming his intention to bless his intention to bless Isaac and to be with Isaac. And so so that does happen twice, and God makes links back to Abraham, because Isaac is Abraham's son. He inherits the promises, and he inherits God's blessing upon him. And then we see all sorts of different ways that Isaac is blessed. And then you have they're not foreign. Isaac's the foreigner, technically. You have the people there recognizing blessings on them, on him. So, and you also see Isaac being mightier than them. But Isaac definitely is passive throughout. He's the one who looks like he's getting pushed around by all sorts of people. But in the end, it's recognized that he is great, he's mighty, and he's blessed by Yahweh. But it all happens very normally, providentially. There's nothing really miraculous that happens outside of God appearing to Isaac twice. And so those are some of the things that, in observing the entire passage, doing some review and then bringing it forward. Remember also that this chapter is here. This is where Isaac really gets his time in the limelight. So in chapter 25, it was about his sons. In chapter 27, it's again going to be about his sons. But Isaac is basically a passive man throughout what Genesis gives to us. And that there's a statement being made about that, especially when you contrast him with Jacob. But all of this, there's so many points that we looked at last time. There's so many points where Isaac, things are happening to Isaac, and Isaac is doing things that connect him directly with Abraham. And they're all showing, whether it's events, whether it's the wells, interactions with Abimelech, they're all the sister wife. They're all showing that Isaac is the heir. He is inheriting these blessings. So, but then there are some differences, minor differences that are important that show a kind of a different side to those blessings. So, anything just in that recap and review, anything that I missed that you want to be sure that said?
Kind of ties into Hebrews 11 about Abraham, his obedience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Verse 5 says, because of Abraham's obedience.
Right.
And then you mentioned this today, verse 24, for the sake of my servant Abraham, he's doing all these ties.
Yeah.
So, way back in Genesis, Abraham's obedience was pretty important.
Yep.
To keep the plan going. You know?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. Anything else?
Say, according to some, though, about halfway through, God changed his mind and decided to take all the promises and give it to the church.
Some say that. We don't say that. Yep. Okay, so What we've looked at so far are the is God's reaffirmation, affirmation of blessing, of being with Isaac while he's in Gerar. And remember, Gerar is kind of toward the southwest in the land of Canaan, and kind of toward the Mediterranean Sea. Not so much in the wilderness, but it definitely is on the edge of the wilderness. He's driven there by a famine. God tells him to stay in the land. Don't go down to Egypt. There's the third sister wife episode. And the key difference here, I should back up. One thing that I've been reading about over the over different points of the last month, since the last time we met, is how to interpret, how to teach Old Testament narrative, because it can be difficult to say, okay, here's all of these things that happened, and God says some things, and people say some things, and what's the important parts? What are things pointing to? And so it can be kind of difficult to not avoid the outcome of reading this and like, okay, well, that happened, or that was said, and so the two questions that I learned to ask this month are when we study Old Testament narrative. And this also applies to the Gospels. What is being said, or what are we being told? So what is the narrator giving us? What is Moses giving us? And then how is he giving it to us? How is he telling us about it? So what are we being told, and how are we being told? And that kind of helps us, especially when you get to, like, why are we coming across a third sister wife episode? A lot of things sound similar. This seems really simplistic. And this might even be a mistake, as some kind of editor, redactor or whatever. None of those are true. There's intentionality here, and it's a really, it provides us with a lot of, in the differences, the minor differences in things that sound the same, it provides us with profound truth to ruminate on. And in this case, with the third sister wife episode, Abimelech does not find out through a dream, does not find out through like Pharaoh with his entire household not being able to conceive, bear children. There's nothing like that. And God doesn't confront Abimelech here with where he does with Abraham with a different Abimelech a generation earlier. All of it happens seemingly ordinarily. It's what happens is normal. A man looking out his window and seeing something. But it's highlighting how it is that God is blessing Isaac. He's blessing him through his providence. God is not doing things in some kind of just blow you away miraculous way. It's all pretty normal, seemingly on the surface. But when you actually look at what happens, like this is what happened. Isaac should have been ruined several times, and it doesn't happen. In fact, the opposite happens. So the third sister wife episode here is kind of a window to the rest of the chapter. What happens to Isaac is only due to God's blessing that is promised to him, and that he inherits and that he actually experiences. And then that has a message for Israel, and it has a message for us. So that gets us up to verse 12, and this is where we start to see another part of Isaac's experience while he's in Gerar. So what we've just been told is, you know, don't, Abimelech puts out this decree, don't, do not touch this man, or you shall be put to death. By the way, what was Isaac afraid of? Why did he call Rebekah his wife, Rebekah his sister instead of his wife?
Killing.
Yeah. And so what does Abimelech say? Anybody who touches him or her dies. Like, God completely reverses it through this decree. Right? So again, another indication. Okay, so Isaac sowed in the land and reaped in the same year 100-fold. Okay, so and then it continues on here, but just think back, and I know I gave this away last time. Did Abraham ever farm that we know of, that we're ever told? No. So maybe there's some experience here, but this is the first time that we've seen anybody, besides actually going back to Noah when he plants a vineyard. And Adam working in the ground. I guess in Genesis 4, there's some people who make some advances in agricultural technology, agricultural advances. But this is the first place where either Abraham or Isaac do something here. Like, even what Isaac does, what he's doing when Rebekah shows up in chapter 24, is he's just come in from the fields where his flocks are, right? So he's a sheeper. He has cattle. He's a rancher, you know, that kind of thing. He doesn't do this kind of thing. And so he sows and then he reaps in the same year. So this is not practice. It's not trial and error. He in the same year, 100-fold. Now the last time we've seen anything about a year, What did we see? Or as far as a time element related to something that would be related to sowing and reaping. Back up in chapter or verse 1. Right, there's the famine, right? So there hasn't really been anything that we've been told about how much time has passed. All right. And so Isaac sowing and reaping, this could be happening at the same time that the sister wife episode is going on. All right. So these things are concurrent. So just think that in the year of a famine, if it actually is the case that this is in the year of a famine, then this is a hundredfold. Jesus makes reference to a hundredfold harvest being like, this is huge. Right. And I've made the mistake of asking Randy whether or not that was a good end. It's not at all. Which, good for us, right? I mean, this is great. But for that time, even all the way through Jesus's time, this is a bumper crop. This is a really good thing. And Isaac does it on the first pass in the context of a famine. And so, of course, the next thing, the Lord bless him. I mean, his blessing is upon him. And so the man became rich. You can also hear some of the stuff that's going to happen later on with Joseph as he oversees oversees Pharaoh's administration with all the... So what happened? Pharaoh has a dream, 7 years of something, 7 years of another thing, right? What's that dream about?
Plenty of
7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine. Joseph interprets the dream, and so Pharaoh gives him the responsibility and the authority to oversee the collection distribution and all of that stuff of the grain that comes in of all the plenty over the 7 years so that it will last them through the next 7 years of just severe famine, and in the process, Pharaoh, because of Joseph, through the years of famine, Pharaoh gets really rich. Because first he gets the people's, he gets the land. I can't remember if it's in this order. He gets the land. He gets their their stuff, their possessions, cattle, things like that. And then he gets them, right? He gets the people. The people sell themselves into slavery so that they can be fed by Pharaoh. So Pharaoh becomes really rich. And so you see a parallel between what happens with Isaac and what happens later on through Isaac's grandson, Joseph. And so Isaac, in this context, he becomes rich and he's very wealthy. And so, but his wealth isn't just in what he's been able to do agricultural or in sowing and reaping, but in harvesting. But it's also just like what we would expect: flocks, herds, many servants, and the result of this is the Philistines envying him. What does envy mean?
Jealous,
yeah. So Philistines are jealous of him. that's the result. Now, this for the Philistines, based on what we know about Abraham and what God promised to Abraham with blessing and curses, what is this? What's the warning to the Philistines right now?
The one who curses you, I will curse.
Yeah, yeah. So if the Philistines keep going down this road, it's not going to end well, right? If Abimelech keeps going down this road, if he lets his people go down this road, this is not going to end well. Now, we know that as readers, whether or not they know that, they're going to recognize God's blessing on, and so they're going to change, they're going to turn, but this is never a good sign. Now, verse 15, so we're told about this is Isaac while he's in Gerar, all right? So where he's in the city. This would be just piggybacking off of this morning where they're living in tents. This would be about the only time in the land where one of the patriarchs actually lives in the city. And so it's in the context of a famine. So this would be an exception to the rule, and obviously he's kicked out here. But verse 15 tells us some information that will be important for us to know later. So now the Philistines had stopped and filled with earth all the wells that his father's servant had dug in the days of Abraham, his father. So first, what are we told here in verse 15?
Are they doing that in response to their envying?
Not yet. I mean, let's not answer that question yet.
Okay.
Because that will come up later.
Okay.
So yeah, what's going on?
Filling wells with dirt.
Yeah, filling wells with dirt. And what's the significance of these wells?
They were Abraham's.
Yeah, so there's a connection to Abraham. All right, so what Moses wants us to do is to connect the Philistine with some kind of scheme going on here, or something that they had done in the past. So between the time that Abraham has moved on, and of course he's died, and Isaac, between the time of Abraham leaving this area and Isaac coming back into the area, the Philistines had stopped these up for whatever reason, and so they had stopped these up. And so these wells are going to come into play once verse 17 comes up, when Isaac starts digging wells. So so to answer the question, why now, with verse, why did they do this? We're not told why, but it doesn't seem to be in connection with what's gone on with Isaac. That this is just something that has happened. Somebody made a decision to fill these wells up. Over the course of the intervening years. And so that's why the ESV, you know, really helpful in giving us parentheses. Is NAS and LSV give parentheses there? Okay. So this definitely is this is background information that you need to know, so that when Isaac is sent out of the city, he's not being sent out into the same kind of situation that Abraham had, where he had access to all this water. Isaac's not going to have that initially.
Is this desert land?
It's not desert like Sahara or something like that. It is wilderness, so it's desolate. There's the only thing So there's not going to be much agriculture that's going to be going on there. And so you've got dry creek beds, you've got wadis that are going to fill up during the rainy season, but then they're going to go dry real quick. You do have, so there's limited pasture land. And so it's more like a, it's wilderness, not in the sense of like a forest or something like that, but just there's nothing there. So maybe think of the northern plains, but with a lot more rocks. So just you've got grasslands, but then you've got these rocky areas where nothing's going on, and a whole bunch of valleys and that are coming down from the shelf to the east, things like that. So it's not inherently hospitable.
It just makes no sense that they would fill up the wells.
Yeah.
I mean.
Right. Yeah. And so we're not told like what's the background on this, why, but it, so it's only, and this is like the, what are we being told? This only informs us for when Isaac goes out, when he's kicked out. Like, this is actually really bad. He's in a really bad situation here. But we don't know why the Philistines filled him up.
How is it not tied to the previous sentence that they envied, the Philistines envied them?
How's it not tied to it?
Yeah.
Because it's functioning in more in the background. So this is, it's, so had stopped. This is something that's prior to the envy. And then verse 16 actually picks up the, what does Abimelech do with that envy? Right? So remember what the, when Lot is opposed by the people of Sodom, like his life is in danger. But Isaac, when he's envied, his life is not in danger. He's just kicked out. And so this is another example. God's blessing is on Isaac. God's blessing and protection in this case. So he's provided for him, and now he's protecting him just through this, through Abimelech, really. Like, Abimelech is God's agent of protection. And in this case, you're not going to stay here any longer. You're out. But you're not dead. And you're not plundered. And part of the reason why you're not those things is like, just like Abraham has his 318 trained men and can hunt down this bigger force and take him out in a night. This Isaac, it's not just that he has stuff, he has power with that stuff. And so Abimelech does a cost analysis. I don't know. He does an analysis of the situation and says, okay, if we try to fight Isaac, he's gonna beat us. And so the only solution is he's got to go.
And I kind of think the answer's question, why would they stop those wells up? It had to do something with that, because the Philistines were more threatened by Isaac or Abraham's descendants rising up than they, because obviously they could have used the wells, but they were more threatened. So that was a way to hopefully keep his power down, because he doesn't have those wells available to himself.
Perhaps, but I think that the had stopped says that this is
Before.
Yeah, I agree. That's my point. But
are you saying like maybe this is like in the, this has been in the works?
Yeah, they
a scheme in the works. Okay,
just to spite, yeah, Abraham and his descendants.
It could be
because he was so powerful, and they say, let's, you know.
Okay.
The only way they could stop his prosperity was to fill up the wells. Right. That was essential. That's for
kind of what I,
yeah,
make it inhabitable.
But they would. They didn't have power either.
I mean, right. I mean, yeah, you think they just go use the wells, but they, right, were probably more threatened, right, by him.
Well, and here them. In a moment, people in the valley are going to do, like, no, that's our work.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Perhaps it's been in the works, not just in, over a couple of weeks, but actually, this has been a systematic thing in the past. Yeah.
What did you say was in parentheses? I missed it.
Verse 15.
Well, MacArthur missed that in the New Bible. He didn't put it in parentheses.
Well, I don't think it's in parentheses in the NAS either, right?
It is in my name.
No.
Yeah.
It's not LSB.
So that would be a, yeah. So that would be an advantage of the ESV over the LSB there. It just, because it's, how does it begin the translation? I don't have it in front of me. The verse 15.
Now
So it does say now. So there is this sense of like, okay, let's stop for a moment. Let me give you some information that's necessary for you to know moving forward. This now. It's just that but without the parentheses, it doesn't make you stop enough, I think. Say, okay, let's disconnect this from the situation that I've just described. The parentheses does that. It's like, let's get some distance, let's get some perspective about the situation that Isaac is about to go into when Abimelech says go.
So we could just say Abner Child did it instead of MacArthur.
I mean, yeah, Abner Child did it. Blame him. Of course, LSB is like 95% NAS anyway, yeah. Right? So you do have an LSB now.
Yeah.
That's it? All right.
Okay. Well, it's free. So.
Well, I mean, how did you get that for free? From Grace to You?
You don't listen to John MacArthur?
Apparently not.
I got one too. Yeah.
Was it a deal? A Grace to You deal or something?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Else
yeah.
There you go.
I think it was a limited time. You're out
there. I already got a really expensive one, so it's at home.
It's, yeah, some of us it's, can't wait for the free candy.
It's no, yeah, you can't.
It is, and it buys yours.
It's really heavy, and so it's like it just sits on the table. It's like I just need the space to open it. And anyway, all right, enough of that. Okay, so go away from us, for you are much mightier than we. So this is what. This is what Abimelech does with the jealousy. Go. And I think this is another indication. Here's God's providential protection using Abimelech to protect Isaac. Okay? So now that brings us into the next section, or really we concluded in verse 17 and move into verse 18. So Isaac departed from there and encamped in the valley of Gerar. So he's not in the city, in the vicinity anymore. He's in the valley, which now he's moved to the more to the east, into the wilderness, and he settles there. So he's setting up his camp. And so what does Abraham do? I'm sorry, what does Isaac do? He dug again the wells of water that had been dug in the days of his father, of Abraham, his father. So this is picking up the information that we were told back in verse 15. So what's the first thing Isaac does after he sets down there? He digs up these wells that the Philistines had stopped after the death of Abraham. So this does give us an indication of when that happened, of when verse 15. When verse 15 happened. It happened after the death of Abraham, which, I mean, would include these days. So that means, so that tells me this is an extended period of time over in the intervening years. And so remember how did Abraham get access to these wells? It's at the end of chapter 21. Yeah, so 21. And yeah, he makes a covenant with Abimelech, a previous Abimelech, who also brings along a previous Phicol, commander of the army. And so that's that generation, and now we're in the next generation. And so this is not necessarily illegal or underhanded or anything like that, because those treaties are only as good as for as long as the men who made them live, right? So it's not inherent that they get passed down. That may be part of some arrangement, but not necessarily this. So Isaac gets about digging. So remember that. So this is basically the third thing that Isaac does. He's been a herdsman, right? And then he's been farming, and now he's back to herds. But in order to have herds, he's got to have water. And so now he's digging. He's digging all over the place and in strategic locations. And so without these wells, he will not survive. He will be ruined.
It's interesting that where they're digging and dug again, what tools they had to have to do that digging with, or to do, you know, they didn't have shovels back then.
Oh yeah, yeah they know.
Did they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they were sophisticated. Okay. Yeah. They were
but
good.
They didn't have tractors.
Yeah, they didn't have tractors and bulldozers.
Yeah,
and that's where Isaac having the many servants, mm-hmm. like he's got a workforce, mm-hmm. doing this.
Doing the work.
Okay. Yeah. So, but that yeah, not easy, not anything besides muscle doing this.
Right. Right.
Whether
rock,
it's
a lot of rock too.
Whether no, it's animal muscle
because it would have filled in a lot easier with rock.
So yeah. These aren't the same wells, because it kind of sounds as if they are, or are they not?
Same wells as?
Well, because dug again, the wells of water that had been dug.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, so they're the same wells that Abraham dug.
Just take the dirt out.
Is it dirt?
I guess, yeah, I was thinking that those were in this place where he left, but these are actually in the place that he went.
Went to.
Isaac?
Where Abraham was.
Where Isaac went to?
Yeah.
Yes. So Abraham was a generation prior, and now Isaac is in the same place. So, and remember what God has said already. I'm with you. I'm blessing you for the sake of your father, Abraham. And so there's that connection. And then we're also told this. What does Isaac do with these things? He doesn't rename them. He doesn't re-identify them. He gives them the same names that his father had given him. So there's a... Isaac is picking up this torch, and it's represented in the wells, but he's doing the same things, good and bad, like the sister wife. He's doing the same things that his father Abraham had done, and the blessing is confirmed. Perhaps in some different ways, but nevertheless confirmed. So throughout, God in his providence is blessing Isaac. And blessing him through provision, blessing him through protection. And Isaac is picking up on what's going on. He's embracing the blessing. He's embracing the legacy, he's embracing the heritage of his father, which throws from chapter 25, throws Esau into a different light, right? Jacob knows how important the birthright is. Esau's like, what good is that to me if I'm dead? And Isaac's actions here are saying, let me tell you how important this is. So he's doing this intentionally, not just digging it because I need to survive, but also this is part of the family legacy. The blessing is, and so he gives them the same names. Verse 19, he runs into some problems. So, first of all, remember, Abimelech kicks him out, and Isaac doesn't say anything. He's gone. He leaves. Here, we have something similar. When Isaac's servants dug in the valley and found there a well of spring water. So, what's spring water?
Live, active, flowing.
Yeah, yeah, there's a flow there, yeah. So that's a big deal. So we're not waiting on the rains to fill this up. It's so there's a continuous source of water.
It was probably an artesian well.
Artesian well? Are you being serious right now?
That's one where the water comes up and just keeps flowing out.
Sorry, you said artesian and I heard mineral. And sorry. That's why I asked if you were being serious. It's hard to tell. So conclude your point.
Well, I mean, you think about a spring is coming out of the ground on its own if it was a spring. But they dug to get that. So it was probably a well, when they dug down enough, the water was there right at the top, and it stays at the top all the time.
Okay. Yeah. And that might be a well that you, in digging it, it's not like you're digging a hole in the ground, but you're actually digging yourself access to like a platform to get to that water where it's a pool there?
Well, I mean, however far they dug, they hit the water table that was above that kept that at that level.
Okay.
So it actually flows out or it stays level.
Okay, I see. So, so Isaac's servants dig the well, they find a spring, And so now they quarrel. So some herdsmen from Gerar, they quarreled with Isaac's herdsmen. All right. So this is kind of similar to Abraham and Lot a little bit, right? From chapter 13. And they say, so these herdsmen of Gerar, they say, the water's ours, so it belongs to us. You did the work, but it's ours. It's in our territory, right? So he, Isaac, called the name of the well Esek, because they contended with him. So Esek means contention. All right, so...
Does that have any relation to the Esau?
No.
Okay.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, similar, but I just wonder.
Yeah, no.
So are these also Philistines?
So it's interesting there that Moses' writing says the Philistines actually don't arrive until around this period. And so Moses is I think he's anachronistically calling these people Philistines, even though the Philistines that we know of later on and that Moses and his generation know of, they don't actually come and migrate to this area until around this time period. That we're reading about. So Philistines is just a way to say, it's not an error or anything like that. It's intentional to say the people that we know of them as Philistines, so we're just going to keep it that way. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, because you know,
but
these,
yeah,
Philistines
these
stopped up the wells.
Yeah,
are these those same people?
They're of the same people because
okay.
they're from Gerar.
Okay, right.
Herdsmen of
but
Gerar.
Maybe not the exact.
Yeah, no, they'd be not the exact same people, but they would be by region, by the area, they would be of the same people.
And these were herdsmen. They needed the water.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So is this another well in addition to the Abraham's wells?
We're going to get... No, this is one of the same ones.
But it says when he dug them up, it gave him the same name, but now he's giving one named East. He's changing the name to East, though?
It would seem that way, yes. So initially it has the same name and then the name gets changed because of the experience. So we're going to run into, at the very end, we run into a well that has the same name because of the experience. So I would say probably an initial renaming, and then there's this experience that paints this particular well in a different light, a light of contention rather than what it was in Abraham's day. So a first naming and then a second naming as they're leaving. Make sense? Okay. So there's contention, and then what does Isaac do? He doesn't fight against them. They dig another well. And they quarreled over that one also. So digging, quarreling, and so he calls his name Sitna. Does anybody have a note that for what Sitna means?
Enmity.
Enmity.
See, that sounds like different wells.
No, because, so what, this verse 18 right here, verse 18 is a summary of this particular section.
Okay.
So this is what Isaac is doing overall, and as he goes to those particular places, the names are being given. I think they're given different names at this point because of the experience.
Okay.
Now it could be that Abraham has the same experience. We don't know about it until now. And so the names of the wells that Isaac is giving to them are actually the same names that Abraham gave to them. So that could also be. And that may be more likely because those are the names that were given.
Just I can see that. It just seemed like he dug Abraham's wells and now he's digging wells.
Right.
The Hebrew does sum up and explain.
Yeah. So these wells are Abraham's wells. That he dug. So maybe I'll change my I'll change my view here on the fly, that these names actually line up with what Abraham had given them in the first place.
Oh, yeah. I'm not
kind of arguing. It's okay. Well, no, I'm arguing with myself. I'm arguing with myself. So this is well number two. And what does Isaac do next? He moved from there and he dug another well. So he's not like standing up for himself. He's like, he's getting pushed around. And this is the mighty man, right?
His servants must have been just like, are you kidding?
Again?
Just deal with these.
Yes. don't you remember what Abimelech said? You're mightier. Like, you can take these guys.
We don't want to dig another well.
it's not his land. And if the agreement with Abimelech and Abraham expires when those two made the covenant, he's kind of...
He's in a corner. I mean, he's in a hard place.
He's kind of sojourner in that land.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Doesn't have a rights problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could he just be acting like a rich man? Like, that's fine. I'll just go take another one.
Perhaps.
He was a rich man. Look at all his wealth.
I could afford. Yeah.
But do you see what else is going on with that? They go to in verse 22. They dig another well. With the implication of each place of digging a well, they're finding water, mm-hmm. right? What kind of water, you know, is it spring water or whatever? Don't know, but they're finding water everywhere he goes. He's finding water, right? So his passivity is actually, it's commending him as like he's trusting, like God is providing for him everywhere he goes. This is the blessing of God. And Isaac is responding in that way. So in other words, this is part of the point that I see in chapter 26 that will actually contrast with Jacob. Isaac does not fight for the blessing. He enjoys it. Jacob will fight, and he'll suffer because of it. And so Isaac's like this totally passive guy. You can push him around, but then at the end of the day, you're going to recognize, okay, God's on his side. No matter what I do to him, he comes out better, which also happens for Jacob. It's just that he keeps running into these walls thinking he can do it his way, right? And so that's the lesson that he's got to learn. And Isaac doesn't have to learn that lesson because he already believes it. He's like,
so his passiveness is more faith-filled.
I would say so, yes.
Kind of shows that at the end of verse 22 when he says, finally, Yahweh has made room for us.
Yes. Yeah, for now the Lord has made room for us. We shall be fruitful in the land. Yeah.
The Lord would. I just didn't know.
Okay. Well, I'm still
not here.
I'm still wondering, why are they naming these wells again? Why are they giving them wells names?
The names represent the significance of the place and events that happened around that.
Contention.
So contention, envy, or what was the first one? Enmity. Yeah, contention, enmity, and now there's this is spacious.
Okay.
This is spacious. And so he is acting, Isaac is acting like Abraham here. When Abraham says to Lot, what do you want?
Mm-hmm.
What do you want? Mm-hmm. And that's actually an expression of Abraham's faith, right? About the land. Isaac is doing the same thing as Abraham. And that's why there's so many connections here to Abraham. It's like Isaac is Abraham, so to speak. He's got the same faith. But then you also have God is with him every step of the way, both said explicitly, it's recognized by others, and then we see it throughout the passage. Danny, were you going to say something?
I was just wondering if there's anything, because the way I see him digging a lot more wells than what you have him dig. Because I think the first part of it, because of the then, in verse 18, he dug all the wells that his father Abraham had dug. Okay, it says, then, the next day, they dig another well, and then, I mean, to me, that would indicate a succession of what happened.
Mm.
My notes say the third, this last one, the spacious one, was the third of a series of wells dug by Isaac in the territory of the Philistines.
So,
I just wonder, is the sentence structure, I don't know the original language or anything, but to me, the thens would indicate a succession of time. I mean, that's usually the way we read it in other
passages. Yeah, so, yeah. Let me see what verse 21.
That's what I said, Danny.
So what you have in these places where he digs a well, so how... So, okay, so there's a Hebrew letter, the Hebrew letter is Wow or Vav, and it looks like that, over here. So it just looks like that. So that's just it's just a conjunction, and it's usually a coordinating conjunction, and so it depends on the verb or the word that it's attached to. In this case, it's all, from what I can see, just on a glance, they're all attached to the same kinds of verbs. And so there is a sense of then this, then this, then this, which the ESV does capture here in verse 21. It says then, and it's the same, it's this conjunction here. That's the same conjunction there. So the LSV normally does do the ands, keeps that consistent. And so they would be saying, yeah, there's a progression here. But I just think that this coming, we've just had a change in geographical place. We've gone from the city now to the valley. And so that sets up a new situation. And so verse 18, now that we've had a change of scene, basically, verse 18 to me reads more like a setting up for the a summary of the details that are going to be given in this next paragraph. So that's why I would take it that way. So, but you do have three wells that are dug, and those are in succession. Yeah. Right. So I think verse 18 is just summarizing that, and then you have the succession coming after that. That just how I'm taking it, but. So they go to Rehoboth, and Isaac recognizes what has gone on. So he doesn't take credit. He knows that Yahweh's done this. And now we'll be fruitful in the land, which is an interesting thing for him to say. Because of its connections actually back to Genesis 1 and Genesis 9. That fruitful language is not used, from what I remember, for Abraham's experience. Okay, so now from there he went up to Beersheba. So this is chapter 21 language. No. 20. So we've been introduced to this place in chapter 20. No, it is chapter 21. It's the end of chapter 21. It's after Isaac is born. Because this is where he gets the water rights. The Lord appeared to him. So this is the second time. Appeared to Isaac the same night. So this would be the same night that they find Rehoboth. All right, so that they find water at this place where there's no quarreling. All right, so that same night, and he says, "I am the God of your father, of Abraham your father. Fear not." This picks up what God says back in verse 3, and then also the experience of Isaac when he's afraid in verse 7. Why should he not fear? Because I'm with you and will bless you and multiply your offspring for my servant Abraham's sake. So this is picking up on what God said to him back in verses. It's basically restating it, but now he has the experience of the wells. He's been kicked out of a place. He's redigging these wells, and he's finding quarreling everywhere he goes until he finds Rehoboth, and God's here to say, this is because of me. But Isaac has already acknowledged that. He's already confessed that, that this is what the Lord has done, back up in verse 22. So what does he do? He builds an altar and called upon the name of the Lord and pitched his tent there. I mean, this is Abraham again, right? He's doing all the things that his dad did. And that's showing us as readers, like, okay, this is legitimate. Like, there wasn't any mistake when God said it's Isaac, not Ishmael. Right? This is legitimate. The Lord's blessing is on Isaac. And what God does, or what God says, and what Isaac does confirm both of those things. And then they dig a fourth well. All right, so fourth well in the chapter. So now we get Abimelech coming. Abimelech went to him from Gerar. And now he's got Azusa, his advisor, and Phicol, the commander of his army. So the last time Abimelech went out, and Abimelech is kind of like Pharaoh, so you have just a title of a king, right? So the last time they went out, who was with Abimelech the last time? Phicol was with him. So Phicol seems to be another kind of title, right? So what's this guy doing there? This is different from the last time. Isaac seems to be doing the same things, but throughout the chapters, has a similar experiences as Abraham, but now we have the added detail. First of all, who is he? He's Ahuzath, and he's Abimelech's advisor. So what kind of role would an advisor, any translation say anything different, an advisor?
It says confidential friend.
Mm-hmm. Confidential friend, that's an interesting thing. I don't know how helpful that is.
Well, somebody confides in.
Yeah, okay. I mean, we could go in that direction, but we have to remember that this is political, right? We have a military, we have a king, and we have a military commander.
Must to Trump.
His must. So okay. His must to Trump. So what role does Musk play?
Whatever he wants.
No. We're not. Let's not make this totally political.
He is an advisor. He's looking for the financial mishaps of the government. So,
that's what Musk is doing, right?
Yes.
Okay. But
he was appointed by Trump.
Yeah, I'm not calling I'm not saying anything about legitimacy or illegitimacy.
No, I'm just saying that's his role.
Yeah, yeah.
He's more like Marco.
Okay, but still, we're...
I'm going to King David. Make an example of King David and some of the advisors he had.
Okay, so all of these, I love this because it's all connected politically, right? So we talk about Rubio, that's a cabinet member, okay? Musk is appointed, he's a special appointee within the executive branch. Obviously the cabinet is too. So this guy, he's part of the administration, which means that if you're not just, remember, Phicol represents the muscle, right?
Commander.
Military muscle. Yeah, so you got military muscle, you got the king, you got the head of state, right? Head of government, head of state. And so, you know, Phicol's back there crossing his arms. What is Ahuzath here? He's got his notepad and his glasses and his pen, and he's running numbers, or, you know, if he's a numbers guy, or he's like, okay, I'm going to give you, Abimelech, some advisement on policy. Or like, you know, J.D. Vance the other day with Zelensky talking about diplomacy, right? So he's like a diplomat, which means that things have changed. There's something different here between Abimelech and Isaac as there was than there was between Abimelech and Abraham, and the difference is not just in military might, like, we can't take you out. It is also, we can't overcome the economic power that you have become. We have to enter into an agreement because you're not the one being ruined. We're the ones in the position of being ruined if you decide to go just bat crazy and take us all out. Like, you could do that, whether economically or militarily. Okay, so that's what they're coming, and Isaac recognizes, like, hey, you hate me. You sent me away from you. Why are you here? And then what do they say? We see plainly that the Lord has been with you. They see the same thing that Isaac has seen and said, and the same thing that God has told him. So we said, and we should put some quotes there. It's actually within the quote, so it would be like this. So here's our analysis of the situation. Yahweh is with you. And so we need to have some kind of an agreement between you and us. So let's make a covenant, sworn pact. So this is an oath. There's a covenant that, here's the terms of the covenant. This is it. This is the only term of the agreement, that you will do us no harm. Don't do anything bad against us, because after all, and this is such a man. This is like politics right here. Just as we have not touched you. I mean, remember what I said about Rebecca? Don't touch, right? Don't touch you. So I mean, and then we have done nothing to you but good. You know, I mean. So we have to ignore the herdsmen here. We have to ignore the jealousy that led them out. It's like, this is politics 101, right? It's like, technically, we haven't done anything to harm you, right? We've only done things that, look, it's turned out for you for good. And everywhere we've driven you away, there's more water there. You know, no harm, no foul.
Which is why we want to be your ally.
Right, yes, exactly. And we sent you away in peace. Like, okay, yeah, you didn't retreat because of a battle. You know, and so this is definitely being painted in the best light. But it is because it's not just Isaac that they're dealing with. They know that they are dealing with the blessing of Yahweh. They know that. So, who's the he?
Isaac.
Isaac. This is really important. Yeah. Because if you are the mightier one, if you're the host, You need to fulfill the role of the host, but if you're fulfilling the role of the host, you are in first place. Okay? You're responsible for a whole lot. But so Isaac is actually exercising this kind of preeminence over them. He made them a feast. This is part of the covenant feast, the oath feast. And so they ate and they drank. And in the morning, they rose early and exchanged oaths. So they're making the oaths here. We see a little bit of this later on with Jacob and Laban, except they set up a pillar, and theirs is a lot more contentious than this one. And the oaths are basically, you don't harm us, we don't harm you. And who sends them? Isaac sent them on their way. Who has the stronger hand? Who is greater?
Isaac.
And they, so remember, we sent you away in peace. They departed from him in peace. He sent them away. They departed in peace. The reason that they're able to have this arrangement, have this treaty, have this agreement, have this swearing of the oath is all because of Isaac.
Any guess how, in terms of time, how long it's been since Abimelech sent him away?
No, I've no idea.
It's been probably several years, though, for all this to happen. I mean,
maybe. I mean, it depends on... It depends on how long in between the digging. But it's, yeah, I don't know.
So are they saying no that idea. Based on history, you are now the blessed of the Lord? Saying,
it's the evidence.
Yeah.
I mean, it's what they've seen.
Not just obviously that you all
Oh, back in verse 29.
That you are now the blessed of the Lord. I mean, you are the main man of God.
It depends on how you take that now. It's like, we're recognizing this now, or...
No, it's his time that he's risen. Right,
there's the time. Are you saying that in relationship to Abraham?
Yes.
I think so. I think so. Because it's now, you're blessed by Yahweh. And so Isaac has taken up that mantle.
And who's us, that advisor, maybe someone who is, you know, historical kind of.
Perhaps, maybe, maybe. But Abimelech would have access to all that, right. All that stuff too. Because it's like, you know, I remember my dad telling me about this one guy that he dealt with, and like, he did this sister wife thing, and there were wells and a treaty, and it's like, we're probably not going to win this if we keep going down. So, yeah, there's a historical, there'd be a historical record and memory and all of that. But Isaac is the greater one, and that's demonstrated in how this treaty ends up going. But then look, that same day. So remember the same night earlier, God appears and says, hey, this was me. This was me. What you've experienced is me. That same day, Isaac's servants came, and this picks up on the digging of the well back up here in verse 25, at the end of verse 25. So that they've been, this whole time, as the oath has been, the treaty has been going on, and you know, the celebration, the feasting and all that stuff, the servants are digging a well, and they're getting toward the end of that time, end of the project. And the same day that those guys leave, servants came and told him about the well that they had dug and said, we have found water. And so he called it Sheba, and that picks up on the Beersheba. I can't remember what Sheba means.
Oath.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oath, yes. Oath. So well of oath, which is actually what Abraham named
or
it.
Or overflow abundance is another.
Oh, with Sheba? Mm. Okay.
This could mean or overflow of abundance.
Okay. Yeah, which would make sense about like they basically made a treaty about the wells that have already been established, right, with Rehoboth. And now you have something that overflows that. You have access to two wells, and it happens on the same day. So Abimelech will definitely not turn around and say, oh, we didn't know about this. Like, no, this is established. That oath is already established. And so God goes above and beyond, which is probably where the overflowing thing comes. God goes above and beyond what he's done with Abraham.
In answer to Mark's question, Abner Chowder, Hope MacArthur, one of the two.
Those notes are from the old one.
Says that it was 90 years.
Well, between.
Oh, since Dad. Yeah, since Abraham and the first people. Yeah.
But not since he was kicked out.
But I was thinking just on Isaac, when Isaac got kicked out from the meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many years till now? Or yeah. Days or whatever, I just didn't know.
Let me read what he said. Okay. There, so I can't see it. It's real small print.
So yeah, it's been 90 years since Abraham's interactions with the previous Abimelech. So that,
right.
But we don't know how much time between getting kicked out of Gerar and this time. So really, I mean, the takeaway here is like that Isaac doesn't need to fight for this. God's fighting for him. God is providing for him. God is protecting him, because God's overseeing this blessing that's passed on to Isaac, which does a couple things for the chapters to come. It throws Jacob into this light of like, Jacob, what are you doing? Did you learn nothing from Isaac? And I think that's why it's important that the boys have already been born at this point. They've seen this. They've witnessed it. Jacob in particular has witnessed it. But then on the other side, what are Isaac and Rebekah doing in contending with one another in-house about who the blessing goes to? And that's what sets up for the next chapter.
Esau and Jacob grew up fighting.
Right.
They were fighting in the womb before they were born.
Right, yeah. But even then, it's not just Jacob and Esau. It's Rebekah.
Yes.
With Isaac. Yes. Isaac is bent on like, no, this is how it goes. It goes to the firstborn. Isaac, what are you doing? You're not the firstborn. I mean, maybe, yes, from Sarah, but not. Abraham had another son. This is God's choice. So it's like, these guys are just like us.
Yeah.
Right? When we get it, we get it, and it's amazing. But we don't always get it, do we? Like, we don't understand, and we don't live according to the truth that we believe, which doesn't necessarily make us hypocrites. It just makes us limited, sinful humans who we need to learn. And that's why the scriptures are given to us, is so that we'll learn. So we can see the blind spots of others and perhaps get a glimpse on our own blind spots. You know? So so this is like when you put Isaac against the world, I mean, it's God's blessing, right? Pervasive. And just be amazed at how God provides and protects through his providence. And that has a direct link to our lives. He provides for us. He protects us. But then that makes it, that turns it in. Okay, so what are we fighting about? Like, you know, if we were fighting about something in church, what are we fighting about? And why? And why can't we work this out? And so it has links and application to us. I would just say, what's a takeaway here? Just notice how God is protecting and providing for Isaac providentially, and how, recognize how God is doing that. Look back over the years of your life and how it is that God has protected you without you even knowing it at the time, and how he's provided for you throughout that. And just be amazed at God's providence. So that's what I would commend to you, is just be amazed at how God takes care of us. In danger of making this into an actual Equipping Hours. any last thoughts? Comments?
Isaac's in Hebrews chapter 11.
He is. We're getting to him soon.
The verse you read this morning.
Mm. And he comes up.
The promise because of their faith.
He'll come up in verse 20 something too. So yeah.
So was Isaac more wealthy, more scary, I guess is the word.
Intimidating or something.
Yeah, intimidating than Abraham was, because Abraham paid for his wells with 7 ewes.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that was in the context of there were some shady things going on from Abimelech's side, and so that guaranteed.
Right, and also what you said about Isaac didn't have to, okay, the Abimelech and Isaac story was that he left. Isaac didn't have to tell him to go or anything. He just, is that true?
After the treaty?
After the treaty, after the oath.
Yeah, Isaac sends him away.
Isaac sends him away, okay.
Yeah.
Because then Abraham didn't have to, he's the one that didn't have to say anything, because he just got up, he took his army, Abimelech took his army and rose and returned to the land of the Philistines.
Yeah.
So he didn't have to.
Send him away.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Doesn't. So. So this would. I don't know how. What they recognize. What's that?
Abraham giving him the user. Did that make a difference in his attitude in leaving? That he just got up and left instead of.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Yeah. But I think this Isaac sending them away is a way to emphasize Isaac's greatness.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And Isaac made the feast too. I mean, that whole thing was, he was
a peacekeeper. Yeah.
The host.
Yeah. So yeah, the Abraham's ewes come up. He brings up like, hey, you said you've done nothing wrong, but let me tell you what your people have done. And so he presents these ewes to say, let this be a witness about, yeah. Good. Anything else?
I like paying attention to passages like this where it said, where God says, I am the God of Abraham. Mm-hmm. Jesus, I think it was Jesus that pointed out that God says, I am the God of Abraham. Particularly Abraham's dead. But he's still the God of Abraham, who is alive,
and
will be resurrected.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you go back in time, and Isaac could have prevented Abraham from binding him and putting him on the altar. And he did not resist at all.
Mm-hmm.
He's passive, was like a lamb. You know, he allowed him to do that.
Mm-hmm.
He thought his father was killing him, and he didn't fight back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty.
So yeah, I mean, throughout
he's
Isaac's
always peaceful.
Every time we see Isaac, he's being passive. Like even like he's going to send Esau out to prepare him a meal, right? And so Isaac's just going to be passive. He's going to be acted upon at every step of the way, and it doesn't matter. God blesses him. And the only thing that Isaac does, takes the initiative on, is calling Rebecca his sister, which is, that's interesting. Like, that's the only, he's only the activator. Well, I guess he sows, too. He sows and he reaps. He's active there. I think that circles back around that when you're reading these, and Jesus is gonna go back to the burning bush for that to demonstrate the resurrection. Mm-hmm. And so what God says to Moses, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He's not the God of the dead, he's the God of the living. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, God is doing that here. But that commends what I've been thinking about in reading and studying narratives, that what are we being told and how are we being told it? And so I'm paying attention to those little details. They matter, especially when it seems like the same things are going on. So. Okay, we're well past time. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for this passage. Thank you for how you demonstrate your blessing upon Isaac and what that means for us. We thank you that because of Jesus, we also are recipients of your blessing, not in the same way as Isaac, at least not yet, but we receive your blessing in a different way. We have the forgiveness of sins because of your promise in the new covenant, and so we thank you for that. Thank you for providing for us and protecting us, even when and especially when we're just passive observers, even of our own lives. So we thank you. Thank you for being faithful to your promise, to keep your promise down to the very word. And we entrust ourselves to you because you will continue to do that. We thank you so much that you are the God that we worship, and that we worship you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.